be here. It's a very beautiful temple. You know, Krishna and Radha, you know, Ram and Sita. And we've been doing programs here in Houston for about 2 weeks now. And like he was explaining, I grew up in... Actually, I was born on Guam in the Marianas Islands at the end of World War II. It's about 1,000 miles from the Philippines. It's a U.S. Navy base. So I was born there, but when I was about this big, I came back to United States. And my ancestors were pioneers in Arizona. So I grew up there, and then Southern California. Then I moved to Northern California, and I was studying at the University of California. And I started in electrical engineering, and I changed to biological engineering. I was doing surgery on dogs. Yeah. And then I graduated in psychology, and I started a PhD program in Chicago. But by then I was thinking that Western knowledge, because I tried everything. I tried physics, tried biology, tried psychology, and everything was, wasn't complete. So then my mentor, assessor for the PhD, was president of the American Psychological Association, a very nice person. So he said, well, you should try and investigate Asia. Try some different things, you know. So then I headed east, and eventually I came in contact with this, we're Gaudiya Vaishnavas. We're Bengali Vaishnavas, originally. So I came in contact with this tradition, and so I took Diksha in 1974. In 1984, I took the sannyas, vaish, and vows under A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, our founder. And so now we're doing so many programs in different places around the world. And especially in South America, people can really appreciate this. North America is very mechanistic. You can appreciate that. It's very cold, very, like a machine, But in South America, people have a lot more heart. So there we've been having big programs with universities, with the Ambassador of India, National Science Committee, and some very good programs, So these are some of the programs that we've been doing. And since we've come here, we've also been beginning to do programs with the University of Houston, Houston University, and we did a program with them, with Rice University. So this PowerPoint show is kind of self-explanatory. And this is what we just did this about 3 days ago at Rice University. So you're also seeing the same as Rice University. So it's presented for that kind of audience like that. So, jumping there. Light of the Bhagavat is a beautiful book. Here's one sample of the book like that. There you go. We're printing it. We're going to print it in hardbound edition soon. Was composed by Srila Prabhupada in Vrindavan, India, 1961, in response to a congress on cultivation of the human spirit to be held sometime later in Japan. So people were coming from all over Asia for this conference. And, of course, India. It's so many spiritual places, so much philosophical, knowledge. Of course, you also probably know Vrindavan. One of the most spiritual places in India. So Prabhupada was there, and he was thinking, how to help these people? How can they understand this? Very difficult. So he considered that lessons from nature, from the classic Srimad Bhagavatam, would appeal to the enlightened participants. So he selected one chapter, and illustrations were painted for the translation and purports. And we have some of the paintings here. We're going to show some of the paintings like that. But they were done by a very, very nice Chinese lady in this Gongbi style. And Chinese people are very fond of nature and the beauties. And so chapter 20, from the 10th canto, Sukadeva Goswami is giving very nice lessons from nature. So it was a very, very practical choice he made. And for people who don't know about Sanskrit, sometimes even Indian is a little bit confused. I need to move the microphone here. There we go. Yeah. Okay. So there's a professor at the University of California, George Hart. And he has a book, How to Learn Sanskrit, called A Rapid Sanskrit Method. And he says, Sanskrit is, like Chinese, Arabic, Greek, Latin, one of the few languages which has been a carrier of culture over a long period of time. Thus, the variety of writings in Sanskrit and the quantity of those writings are staggering. An incomplete list of the subjects treated in Sanskrit, usually with great prolixity, is as follows. Four Vedas, the Brahmanas and the Aranyakas, Upanishads, grammar, the Puranas, 18 major Puranas, 18 minor Puranas, and hundreds of Stala Puranas. Works on medicine, logic, astronomy and astrology, Ayurveda, Gandharvaveda, granite, law books, architecture, Vastu, Gandharva Veda. On most of these subjects, there is an immense literature still extant. Indeed, a rough estimate of the works which will be listed in the New Catalogus Catalogorum, it's a bibliography, yields a total of about 160,000 works in Sanskrit. Many so difficult that it would take years of study to properly understand them. Sanskrit does have its share of great writers, like Kalidas. Kalidas ranks with the greatest poets. Panini is without question the greatest pre-modern grammarian, and we might argue that he's the greatest grammarian. The Mahabharata ranks with the Iliad and the Odyssey, and the Bhagavat Purana, right, is amongst the finest works of devotion ever written, being equaled, in my opinion, only by other works in the Indian languages. Srimad Bhagavatam. So, in this one chapter that Prabhupada picks, there are 48 texts, and they talk about the three of the seasons. The dry summer season, the rainy monsoon season, and the pleasant autumn season. So here's a very dry summer. You notice in India it can be so much suffering. Then the rains come, there's a guy with a little umbrella, and then after that it's so beautiful, it becomes peaceful, and Krishna shows us what spiritual life is like. From the Bhagavat, light of the Bhagavat, we can take many lessons. The nature of society, the cosmos, hankerings of the soul, greed and wisdom, religion. I'm going to pause here because I think I know why this is bouncing. Maybe the other show here. If I close this, it may not bounce anymore. But it may. Okay. Okay. Yeah, that appears to be it. So let us just pick three texts now. Then later, when you buy the book, you can choose for yourself. Okay. So I picked out three of these texts, number 9, number 16, 23. Yeah. So number 9 is very nice. A picturesque scene of green paddy fields enlivens the heart of the poor agriculturalist. And they're over here, very happy because there's good rain. But it brings gloom to the face of the capitalist who lives by exploiting the poor farmers. And there he is. Because when there's not so much rain, then he can give good loans to the farmers, and they have to pay back with high interest. And so he's very happy then, because he can maintain his beautiful palatial building with silk curtains and fine clothes and clipped plants, beautiful furniture, and all of his retinue of people who are flattering him, talking to him. But when the rains are good, then the farmers don't have to take these loans. Other text says, at night, by the grace of the moonlight, the clouds in the sky can be seen moving. Yet the moon itself also appears to be moving. Just as a living being appears to be moving because of false identification with matter. In the final text, I'm going to go in more detail on these later. The cows that followed the Lord within the forest moved slowly because their heavy milk lay than others. But when the Lord called them by their specific names, they at once became alert. And as they hastened toward him, their milk bags overflowed and poured milk on the ground because of affection for the Lord. Krishna Bhagavan ki jai. So text number 9, more details here. A picturesque scene of green paddy fields enlivens the heart of the poor agriculturalist, but it brings gloom to the face of the capitalist who lives by exploiting farmers. Now, this doesn't mean that all capitalists exploit farmers. We get a lot of money from Microsoft, actually, to do these programs. There are good capitalists also. Good capitalists. So this Varna Ashram system, you're more familiar with this being Indians. We have to explain this a little bit for the students. But you know, it's everywhere. Just like if I have ice in Russia and I apply heat, what happens to the ice? Okay, it becomes water. If I apply more heat, what happens? Becomes vapor. So it doesn't matter whether I do it in Russia or if I do it in New York or if I do it in St. Petersburg or Johannesburg or Houston, Texas. So the Vedas are explaining these laws of social relationships, psychosocial laws. They're more invariant than the physical laws. You know, there's a certain way that women react, men react, kshatriyas react, brahmanas. Everybody has a certain psychology, certain nature, just like the law of gravity. And of course we know these. The brahmanas are the intellectuals, the priests. In the West they become separated about the time of Descartes. But in the traditional Vedic culture, you know, the priests should all be great scientists and the scientists should all be great priests. Same thing. And of course then you get kshatriyas, administrative people, kings, vaishyas are mercantile class, and of course finally shudra is artists and laborer. And we see this everywhere. It's not just an Indian thing. You know, St. Francis, of course, is a great example of a very pure saint. And Einstein is a favorite example of a great intellectual. These are Brahmins. And, of course, all over the world, there are also these different kshatriyas. Shri Radhakrishna Bhagavan ki jai. Srimati Radharani ki jai. Ram Lakshman Hanuman ki jai. So Mao Tsung, missing an S here, he called himself Citizen Mao. But if you know Mao's life, he wasn't a citizen. He was living like an emperor. He had so many concubines and so many assassination attempts. You know, so somebody who was in charge, they had the same responsibilities, the same dangers, the same things. And of course, the big mercantile houses like Ford and Rothschild, Birla, you know, like that. Modi. And finally, of course, we have artisans, carpenters, painters, bakers, and then more simple vaishya activities are also in the same category, little trade like that. So naturally, then, people have different kinds of, you know, way of working, psychology. The Bhagavad Gita explains that the natural occupations for vaishyas are agriculture, animal husbandry, and general traders. Yeah. Agriculture is the noblest profession. It makes society happy, wealthy, healthy, honest, and spiritually advanced for a better life after death. So now we can see we're not doing that. We're getting more and more away from nature. Let a few people do all the agricultural produce with chemicals, with machines, with, you know, cutting all the edges, artificial soil sterilizers, followed by artificial seeds, followed by artificial fertilizer, followed by artificial irrigation, and what do you get?
Artificial
food. It looks like strawberries. It looks like, you know, one Oriental person came to America and went back to see his family, and he said, "Oh, in America, everything is so lifelike." It's not a lie, but it looks like strawberries, but it just tastes terrible, you know. A mango. Is it a mango? Is that a mango? Some hard rock. Yeah. So we should try and understand this. Try and live close to nature, agriculture. Yeah. So Krishna himself, he's God. He can do whatever he wants to do. But he took birth in a Vaishya family, Nanda Maharaj. And by his personal example, he showed us this is the way to live. This is how to be happy and peaceful. And Nanda Maharaj had 900,000 cows. This is a challenge to modern science that we're going through ages. Age of gold, age of silver, Satya Yuga, Dwapara Yuga. So when Krishna was there, it was the end of the age of bronze, Dwapara Yuga, and 900,000 cows. God's gifted professions for mankind are agriculture and cow protection. And trade, okay, we have one more. Vaishyas can also do trade, but only when there's a surplus, when there's a necessity, you know, moving things. And if there's no cultivation of the human spirit, then what happens? Yeah, they become greedy and materialistic, and large-scale commerce and industry, unnecessary things start to develop. And then the merchants try to, you know, allure these poor agricultural people into the cities. With his unsanitary conditions, long hours of dangerous, tense commute. Everybody here has to spend hours going from work. At any moment, there can be an accident. You know? And this is a good place. If you live in a bad industrial area, you can lose your hands and feet every day if you're working in these big factories. With the false hope of earning more money. Yeah, you earn more money, but... Huh? You have more expenses. Yeah. Very tricky thing, you know? Free credit card, but you miss your payment one time and it's $45 late payment. You know? Yeah. So many tricky things just to, you know, and we're more educated. You take ordinary people, lower income people, they're just bewildered. They're slaves. The only thing they own maybe is the equity in their cheap car. It's all they have. Everything else they're paying. And just to calm themselves down, they have to take some intoxication and they die. Humanity must depend on agriculture. Big iron factories cannot produce rice and wheat. So this is the first lesson, you know, from the Bhagavad Purana, from our Indian culture, is that yes, we can live together as people in a very nice fashion. And we can also live with the animals in a very nice fashion. And we can live with nature in a very nice fashion. And there's so much information in these traditional cultures. The British had this whole propaganda program, right? To mislead people about the value of their own culture with Max Müller and others. But actually there's 160,000, you know, literatures in Sanskrit full of all this technical, philosophical, social knowledge. And this is what the world needs. Germany can supply good machines. Don't worry about it. You know, Italy can supply good food. Right? The French people can supply all the romance, you know, novels you want. British, among the best managers in the world. So what is India going to supply? Huh? Philosophy. India is the land of philosophy. You don't take birth in India unless you were endeavoring for spiritual life in your last lifetime. Some inclination with that. Okay, so now we're liberated, you know, from these gross problems, we're peaceful. But still, any human being is thinking he wants something more. And so therefore Buddha comes, Socrates comes, Confucius comes, Jesus Christ comes, in India, so many people. And what's the first lesson that Krishna teaches Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita? In chapter 2, what does he teach him? First thing he teaches him. Dehinoshmin yata dehe, not the body. So our second lesson, this is what we did for the peace program here at Rice University. It talks about the moon. And by the moonlight, you can see the clouds moving. But you've also had this experience, no? That the moon also seems to be moving. The clouds are moving, but the moon appears to be moving. So what is this lesson? The spirit, soul, or living being is the root of all the activities of the material body. But what is causing all this? The soul. Without the soul, even if you have the embryo, you have the DNA, the RNA, it could develop for some time and then it stops. Right? This temple, it's a very beautiful temple. So many activities here, so many different variegated things are going on here. But there's a person behind that, right? people behind that. And if he doesn't do his work, what happens? And unless somebody else takes it over, people lose interest. And it just, you know, weeds start to grow, can't pay the water bill, this and that, and it dies. Big biologists make the same point. You can clone the embryo of a sheep, right? You know, and it will start to grow for some time, but usually it deforms. Why? Because there's nobody qualified with the proper karma to move into that body. People with good enough karma to become fruit flies, you know, spiders, plants, okay. A lot of those kind of people. But some rich man to move into a big house, oh, you know. And unless somebody wants to buy it, no one's going to work. Not getting paid, so it stops. So the root of all these things is the soul. And from that, so many things develop. So we're living peacefully in nature, but now we start this inquiry. Am I really this body? You know? Because of illusion, the spirit soul remains covered by the gross and subtle bodies. Thus covered, the conditioned soul identifies with the material body and becomes subjected to the sense of false ego. I am a white cloud. Well, I am a red cloud. This false ego obliges a living being to consider his material body to be his self, the offspring of the body to be his children, and the land of his birth and the land of his body and the land of the boy and the land of the birth of his body to be an object of worship. Thus, a living being's conception of nationalism is but another type of ignorance. Yeah. That's a Texan flag.
Indian flag
is it?
Indian flag.
It's not there, is it? Everybody's looking for, how many people are looking for the flag of India? I'm Indian. One time I was, maybe you fly from Delhi to Pakistan or something. I was flying from California to Mexico. And as I was leaving California, there was a big sign, you know, saying, oh, see Mexico, it's so beautiful, you know. And I got to Mexico, we're leaving the airport, there was a big sign that said, oh, see California, it's so beautiful, you know. Or even more extreme, one time we were in Peru, South America, and going to the airport, there was a very, very big monument, you know, maybe one block long with soldiers and this and that. And I said, well, what is that monument? And they said, oh, that's for all the brave soldiers from Peru who died fighting the evil people from Chile. You know, they died fighting the people from Chile. So I went to the airport, and by Krishna's arrangement, we landed in Chile, and we're leaving, and there's a big monument of these soldiers. I said, what's that? They said, oh, that's a monument to all the brave soldiers of Chile who died fighting the evil people in Peru. Or you look on one side, there's Pakistan. Other side, there's India and Punjab, right? There's this big, long fence with landmines on both sides and soldiers all ready to move in. But the farmers are growing the same thing on both sides of the fence. They probably are cousins, you know. But because of this ignorance, this false ego, we create so many problems. Somebody thinks he's a chicken. Somebody thinks he's a pig. Somebody thinks he's a cow. And somebody thinks he's Tarzan. Me, Tarzan. You, Jane. Him, boy. And who's the bottom of the line here? But we're not Tarzan and Jane. They're on the altar. Tarzan and Jane are on the altar there. You know, we can maybe hope to be Cheetah and find our real position in life. Okay. In fact, however, a living being does not belong to any nation or species of life. He has nothing to do with the body, as the moon has nothing to do with the moving clouds. Complete knowledge fixes a living being in the orbit of spiritual activities. So we live peacefully in this world by following ethical and moral principles, the Varna Ashram system. Then we start to inquire whether I am this body or not. And our realization is that I'm not this body. This body is a temporary vehicle, and we disappear from this world. But what happens after we leave the body? We all become void. You know? We all go to heaven and play on different musical instruments and try and sing. And off key like that. So the third lesson from the Bhagavad Gita, and this is where most scriptures don't give this idea. The Bible, the Quran, they may give some idea how to live peacefully in this world, how to divide the wealth. You can have so many wives, you can have so much cattle, you must give charity like this. And the people are peaceful if they're following the Prophet Muhammad. Actually, following Muhammad, people are peaceful like that, really following. But that's not the end. Then you start to inquire, well, am I this body or not? And after you realize you aren't the body, well, then what then? So the Bhagavad literatures, Indian literature, among the few literatures which actually talk about the spiritual world. And so Krishna gives an example, 5,000 years ago. When the rainy season had stopped and everything became very peaceful, the cows followed the Lord in the forest, but because of their heavy milk-laden udders, they were moving very slowly. But when the Lord called them by their specific names, Shamali, they at once became alert and hastened toward him. Their milk bags overflowed and poured milk on the ground because of affection for the Lord. In the Brahma Samhita, very beautiful text, it describes the abode of the Lord. The houses are made of touchstone, chintamani. The trees are kalpa vrik, desire trees. And the Lord tends many thousands of kamadenu cows. So Krishna goes in the forest with his friends every day, playing, singing, and all the trees are giving whatever you want. You know? Some description. In contrast, in the spiritual world, all the houses, trees, and cows are qualitatively non-different from Krishna. But in the material world, all the paraphernalia for pleasures in life is all here, but it's all destructible in the end. I remember very much, when you had something experienced like this, when I was a little child, I got this ice cream cone, you know, and I was sitting there looking at it, and it fell on the ground in the dirt like that. And so I was traumatized, and my parents were going to buy a new one, but I didn't want a new one because that could happen again. I was, if you had some experience, something about ice cream cones in India, but something like that. You had something. I saw one little child in India. He was running back home. He had a little plastic bag full of some juice like that, and he fell on the ground. The whole thing fell in the dirt, and he was so hurt. He was running home just screaming, crying. So this is the material world. Everything for our enjoyment in the material world is temporary. You may like your wife, you may like your husband, but in the end, they're all going to become dirt, you know, dust, water, ashes like that. Whereas in the spiritual world, everything is sat. It never comes to an end. And beyond that, it actually becomes better and better. Sat chit, more understandable, more connected, more, you know, alive. And ultimately, the main principle is ananda. That in the material world, in the spiritual world, in reality, Krishna bhoktaram yagnatapasyam. Krishna is the supreme enjoyer. Whereas in the material life, very materialistic life, every man is thinking, I will conquer the world. I will become more powerful than George Bush. I will become more wealthy than Bill Gates. Like that. So material consciousness in every man is thinking like that, you know. But every woman is thinking in material consciousness, that's okay. Let him conquer the world. I will conquer him. Right? That's materialistic consciousness for men and women. The more we become spiritually inclined, the more we give these ideas up. Until finally we get out of the body and we reverse everything. And we realize that, no, Krishna is the enjoyer. In Vrindavan, when the cowherd boys come home in the evening, they've been playing with Krishna, and their mothers give them nice bath and give them some food, and their mothers want to hear all about Krishna. What happened today with Krishna? What happened this way and that way? They don't want to hear about their sons, and the boys don't want to talk about themselves. They want to talk about Krishna, like that. So the mothers know Krishna. He's a boy next door, but he's so wonderful that they can know him better through their sons. So this is spiritual life. Everybody's trying to find so many ways to go to one person who has so many qualities. He's the most generous. He's the most funny. He's the most tolerant. Yeah, he's the most intelligent. Yeah? Like that. So the material world, everybody's pulling the opposite direction. Me, me, no, me, me. You know? Yeah. A man comes home and his children are all pulling, you know, satisfy my desires, everybody else. You know? But in spiritual life, you know, the Lord alone is the supreme enjoyer and beneficiary. Yeah? And everyone else is enjoyed by the Lord. When Krishna descends in Vrindavan, it is with his personal staff of cows, cowherd boys, and cowherd milk maidens. Hearing the Lord calling, these cows were overwhelmed by joyous affection, just as the Lord's, as the mother's breast overflows with milk when a child cries for it. So who's this? Who's this? Yeah. So there's no reason you can't have Krishna for a baby. If you go grihastha, you can play to Krishna to be your baby. That's quite a baby. It attracts all of your love, unlimitedly. And we want to give more and more. All of us living beings are differentiated expansions of the Lord, but our affection for the Lord is artificially covered by the material quality of ignorance. Our affection is covered. Spiritual culture is meant to revive this natural affection for the Lord. But how do we revive it? There's the answer right there. I'm going to tell you. Where's that damn phone? Okay. Yeah. How do we revive this affection? So how do we do that? Nitya Siddha. Any Bengalis here? Bengalis? Okay, I can speak Bengali without fear. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sadhya Kabunaya Shravanadi Shudichita Karajayudaya. Krishna Prema is Nitya Siddha. It's eternal quality of the soul. Eternal quality of the soul. So how do we revive that? It's not something we're trying to get from some other source. How do we revive that? Here's the answer. Receive the messages of the Lord with a purified heart. Knowing things in their true perspective, then the flow of one's natural affection begins to glide towards the Lord. This flow becomes more and more self-realized in various relations with the Lord. So that's the entire purpose then of the Vedic literature, and especially the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's the conclusion. Nigama kalpataror galitam phalam. It's the fruit of all these Vedas. And so gradually Krishna, Sukadeva Goswami, Vyasa, they give us these enlivening instructions. That's the real purpose of having a temple. Without hearing about Krishna, we can never understand who he is on the altar. Somebody will come and think, oh, you have a very, very pretty Indian statue on your altar. But it's not an Indian statue, it's Krishna. If you hear properly, understand properly, like that. So having very, very nice katha here, you know, discussing Krishna, reading from books by self-realized souls, and it cracks the heart. We start to develop a taste for this, and we start to become enlivened and see everything in our life in a spiritual perspective. And then it flows more and more, the bhava comes, and at that point we can't be separated from Krishna. And we're enjoying life at every moment, not just a little bit, but with a great thrill. And as opposed to that, more and more materialistic. Have to get another car, have to get more clothes, have to get different food to eat. I'm already so fat I can't breathe, but still, I want more. I have so many cars I can't maintain them, but I want more. And what do you do? You die with this great, you know, weight. All these cars and houses and clothes and fat hung around your neck. You die. And you're happy to die. Oh God, you're happy to go to hell. Right? Because Yamaraj then beats you back in shape to give you another chance. So, here's a summary then. We also do this in South America. Slides in Spanish. The cultivation of the spirit human, a ambient human peaceful. So the first thing is to create a human peaceful human atmosphere. Without this, how can we progress? Then after we have a useful, peaceful human atmosphere, then we have to liberate the soul from matter. And then finally, what is the character of the soul in the immortal atmosphere? These are three quick lessons from the Bhagavatam. And of course we have so much wonderful literature here from our own mission, but not just ours, there's so many other wonderful things in the world. So make a choice to listen to certain movies, you know, see certain books like that, develop these things. Yeah, and also we brought a very, very beautiful display of paintings, the art, because there's 48 different things. So these were on display in South America. We brought some of them here to look at like that. Yeah. So if you're an artist, paint for Krishna. If you're a cook, cook for Krishna. If you're a dancer, dance for Krishna. If you're an engineer, build temples for Krishna. If you can make money for Krishna. Like that. So thank you very much. Please spread the light of the Bhagavatam. We have a very, very nice web page. So maybe after the RT, we'll have a little bit more short presentation like that, some questions like that. Okay, thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Yeah. Finished. I told you. Okay.
Can I turn on the light, please?
Yeah, please. Okay, fine.